Welcome to Unapologetic. Thank you all so much for tuning in today. I have Flex and Preston here with me, as always.
Hey guys, it's Preston here. I'm here.
That was so, like, subdued. Okay.
Yeah, you know, that's just the energy. I don't know. I feel like it takes so much effort to come and always, not here to the podcast, just to be energetic in general.
Yeah.
Like, life is so toxic at the moment in every facet that I have to really try to be energetic. And honestly and truly, I just don't be having it in me.
I get it though. Like, I just, so Preston and I, like, prior to actually starting recording, we just had a whole, like, session where I was just, like, literally spilling
everything.
A whole novel. Everything. And I totally agree. Like, life is just so freaking toxic right now. Like, and it's not, I feel like, I mean, I think for both of us, this would apply, but it's not even like us. It's like everything that's going on around us. Like,
right. So that does mean we are the main character.
Oh no. I do not want to be.
I'm fine with being the main character because, you know, honestly and truly, I'm a bad bitch. And at the end of the day, bad bitches, you know, we stay as the main character, okay? All day, every day.
Okay, well, you could be the main character. I will be the person who, like, paints the backdrop. Like,
no.
Yes.
No. I always think of, like, things in horror movies, you know.
Oh, no.
Those are my favorite films. And so when I think main character, I always think I Know What You Did Last Summer with Jennifer Love Hewitt. And Jennifer Love Hewitt is the main character.
Yeah, I did see this. Yeah.
It's such a classic, like, 90s, early 2000s film. It is my favorite horror movie. Jennifer Love Hewitt was the main character, but Sarah Michelle Gellar, you know, Buffy, mm-hmm. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, she was also, you know, top bill main character. So, like, that is you and I. We are Jennifer Love Hewitt and Sarah Michelle Gellar.
I think Jennifer Love Hewitt is just so beautiful, but otherwise, I don't think she's... I feel like she's not very talented.
don't wash that out of your mouth. Go wash your mouth with soap.
But I think she's so beautiful.
Okay, blasphemy.
And okay, I have to, like, I guess I have to take that back. I don't think she, maybe she hasn't been allowed to show her talent because I feel like she's always just like the sexy, like, beautiful woman, you know, the hot wife. Like,
yes, she's been typecast.
Because she's throughout her career. Freaking beautiful. Like,
I think she just cannot look ugly, even if she tried, you know. So a lot of her roles are not, you know, these beefy roles, and when she's tried to do it, I don't think it worked out in her favor. So, like, why are we going into this whole thing? But Jennifer Love Hewitt is a star. She is an icon. She was in what's that show on The Client List?
Oh yeah, I watched that too.
And she, you know, she did a little acting, but not really. But, you know, she was still in her character of being the sexy person.
Yeah.
Right. But then after that, she went to, like, Criminal Minds. And that was, like, the first time I saw her, like, very drama.
Wait, is she in Criminal Minds?
She's in there for, like, a random season.
Oh, okay. And maybe I haven't gotten there yet.
A season or two. But she comes in as, like, a cop or whatever, as the investigator. But I want to say she didn't respond well. Like, the viewers were like, why the fuck is she here, basically? And so they let her go.
She's hot.
Right. And, you know, she was also, like, I think having children. And so, like, I think, you know, she had, like, weight gain because of that. But she didn't, I don't know, I feel like her sexy persona is not as prominent anymore because I think she's older, she's more mature, you know, she has a family now. So, you know, it's not just about her puss and boobs. And currently I'm watching her on the show 911 and I really enjoy her on that show.
Really? Yeah, I think she's beautiful, but what I said before still is true. Anyway, but that's okay.
How are you, Mona? How are you? We're just going to have to move on. Okay.
I don't know. She's an icon. She is an icon. Everyone knows who she is. Even I know who she is. I don't know who anyone is. I know who she is. So that tells me something.
I'm very surprised by that.
But how am I doing? I am not living the main character right now. I am the fly on the wall in my life. Not in my life, actually, in everyone else's life. In my own life, I'm doing great. Mm. Kind of, I think so. So I was telling Preston that I fired my therapist. And maybe we can get into that another episode. But like, even that wasn't, I don't feel bad about it. Like, I feel empowered by that decision.
You should.
But yeah, so it doesn't, like, I feel like when people say something like that, it would come off as like a negative thing or like something that, I don't know, is not positive, but for me it's actually a very positive thing. So I'm in the search for a new therapist. I will probably put that off for a few months because I do not have time. My mom and my sister both literally get on my case all the time about taking my health more seriously. So yeah. I need to be better about that. But
it's important. I mean, take your time. I stopped seeing my therapist in February. And I'm just now getting to a point where I'm like, okay, let's see what is out there. But y'all know me. I'm blackity black black. And so I'll be trying to find black therapists. And they are just... there are not enough to go around. Pissed. Because it's one thing if I have to explain like the gayness, like explain the blackness, and I really and truly don't have time. I really and truly don't have time. And so my hope is that she is of the time and that she's woke and that she may not understand everything that I say, but at least she can empathize and understand that what I'm saying is real and valid and that she's not going to try to, you know, quote unquote, mansplain the issues that I'm going through or therapist-splain. I don't know if there's a term like that.
Yeah.
I just need her, you know.
Be a therapist. And yeah, I think it's important for them to be with the times because otherwise they're gonna be out of a job.
There's always white folks, so you know, the white folks, they'll keep them employed because they'll all be like, yeah, we're white, yeah, and they'll just all be white. And they won't have to worry about the issues from, you know, other races and other marginalized groups. So, you know, it is
I was listening to a podcast that went into that, so you're absolutely right. Like, I mean, they made a lot of good points, but I think we'll talk about some of those points. We will talk about some of those points. Today we wanted to talk about Preston's experience with buying a house. So Preston's going to kind of walk us through what the process was like and, you know, what he was looking for in a house, and maybe even what his dream house is, like, if, you know, money and stuff wasn't a factor. And then also, like, if there were any barriers that he noticed or whatever.
These are all things that I still, because I'm still, like, going through the process. I haven't finished. Like, we are maybe 2 weeks out from closing. So this would be a good time to process what has occurred over the last few months. So yeah, where should we start? Should we start with?
I think you should start from the beginning. Like, what are your reasons for buying versus renting?
Oh, that's a good start. Okay, so man, so I have always known that I was going to one day pursue home ownership, right? So my parents own their home. They purchased their home in right outside of Atlanta, Georgia in 1991, I believe the year I was born. And they bought that house at the time, I think it was well under 200,000. I think it was like 180, 170 or something like that for their home. So it was years ago, 30 years ago, and they have lived in the same house ever since. So they have lived in the same house, and I've seen my parents renovate the home and update the home and, you know, maintenance on the home. And so, you know, it was always something that I saw and knew that I wanted to do. It was also something that my parents, you know, pushed on my sister and I as a part of our American dream. We keep coming back to this thing. We really should have just called the podcast The American Dream, but I feel like there's another podcast called that. But we keep coming back to this idea because I think we are ingrained to believe that home ownership is kind of the pinnacle of adulting and one of the ways to begin to build wealth for your family, for yourself and your family, basically. So I knew it was something I was going to do. What expedited the process is that Tyler and I got engaged, and I might have mentioned on this podcast that we also have a roommate. So long story short, I had my own place and I was living that bachelor's life, bruh. And Tyler had this current apartment that we're living in with his friend from high school, and they had lived together forever. And she's a dope person. And when my lease was coming up, I was like, well, I'm always here anyway. Why don't I just move in with you guys? Tyler and I are in a relationship, so we stay in the same room anyway. And we would just split everything three ways. And therefore, we all saving money. We all saving on rent. We're all saving on bills, everything. And they was like, cool, cool, cool. So that's what happened. I moved in almost 2 years ago now. But of course, now that we're married, now that we're engaged, you know, I ain't trying to be living in, you know, the college life situation for the rest of my life, right? Like, I want to be able to have loud, passionate intercourse, not only in the bedroom that we have to close the door and, you know, turn up the music because our roommate is, you know, the next room over and be very quiet. I don't want to do that no more. Like, I want to be in my own room. We can be as loud as we want to be. We can say, you know, at the end of the day, why keep it to the bedroom? Where the kitchen at? You go to the kitchen. You know, it's just, I want to be able to do what I want to do in my space. So that's the superficial piece of it, right? Like, I want to be able to have my own space. I want to be able to, like, walk around naked. I want to be able to just decorate it the way that I want to decorate it, i.e. we, but more me, because I'm going to tell Tyler what's happening. But the more real side is that, of course, home ownership can be a way that you begin to build wealth and build equity in your home or in the thing, or build equity in what you're already putting your money into. So when you're renting, you're paying someone else, right? And you're paying to occupy that space. But once you leave, you have no tie to the building. There's nothing that follows you. And so when you have a mortgage and when you're purchasing a home, The hope is that the money that you put in, you will be able to get that back and some when it's time for you to sell. You want to continue to have the equity in your property go up so you can purchase at a higher, you can sell at a higher price than you purchased it. And then you reinvest it. And so that's what people do. They either reinvest it in another property that puts them, a bigger home, a better neighborhood or whatever. Or they invest that money into, you know, another type of building, like another like 2-unit building or 3-unit building and rent it out. Excuse me. They rent it out and then, you know, they can start to build equity that way. By once they pay off that loan, then any money that they make is pure profit, right? Or not pure profit, but once you pay the maintenance and expenses and all of that stuff, then you can take that home. So it makes sense. And plus, I'm like 30 now, and it's like I just, you know, it's time.
Yeah, definitely. And like, I don't know. I think purchasing property is actually a really smart investment move, just because like I felt like this for years, but like, it's like when you're renting, you're like kind of throwing away your money, like almost, you know, like you get the place to live, but like, you know, that's like whatever, $1,000 that like you could have put into a property that will kind of, you know, like you'll be able to make money off of in the long run, like when you sell. And I've struggled with that a lot because like part of me just wishes I could own, but like part of me also knows that all the places that I've lived so far, I just are temporary. Right.
Right.
And I guess I could rent. Yeah. I guess I could like rent or like, you know, work with a rental company to rent out these properties. But like, I feel like that'd be another life stressor that I don't want to deal with. So I've been like waiting for whenever I settle down, if I ever do.
And that's good to know. Cause a lot of people, I think a lot of people think that they need to buy, like they need to buy a home. They need to buy a home. And I think that you have to be very honest with your situation and ask yourself, am I going to be in this place for at least the next 5 to 10 years? Because if not, then no, I don't need to purchase. I should continue renting.
Right.
And, you know, and that's how I felt when I was in Texas, because I didn't know what, you know, we were still in grad school. I was an undergrad in Texas. I went to grad school. So I didn't know where my life was actually going to end or go. But I've been in Chicago now for 3 going on 4 years, or maybe 4 going on 5. I moved here in 2018, so whatever that is. So 3 years. So I've been here about 3 years, and I foresee myself staying here in Chicago. I don't foresee myself doing another move across country anytime soon. So unless they're talking about making your boy CEO at a hospital, I'm not moving.
That's so funny, because I was talking to one of my friends last night, and she was like, yeah, I would move to New York if they paid me a 7-figure salary. And I was like, 7 figures? Like, what? But that's kind of what you would need, I think, to live in New York.
To live comfortably. Nice. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, but yeah, I mean, it's awesome that you, like, does Chicago feel like home to you?
That's a good question. Yes and no. So home truly for me feels like Waco, Texas.
Okay, interesting.
And I think it feels that way because that's where I went when I was 18. I moved to go to Baylor there. And then I stayed there for like 10 years. So I feel like a lot of my like formative years of like identifying and figuring out who I am and some of my first experiences happened in Waco. My really good friends still live there in Waco. They were Waco residents anyway. And so that is home to them. And so I just feel connected spiritually to Waco. That feels like my home more so than where I actually grew up. But Chicago, I will say, is becoming my home because of Tyler. And I feel like if it wasn't for Tyler, then I don't know if I would have this strong connection with Chicago, especially based off of like the friends that I built. Like I have friends, but a lot of them were formed at work. So I don't have a lot of like outside Chicago community type of friends. And then my family isn't here. So so it is home because of Tyler and because I enjoy the work that I do and the people that I met through work. But, you know, every now and then I entertain the thought of moving back to Texas with Tyler.
Oh, that's yeah. I don't know. I feel like you fit into Chicago. Like I feel like as you know, as an outsider, like it would make sense that you would feel tied to Texas, but to me, like your entire vibe feels more like Chicago and not like Texas.
Where is home for you? Because you've lived multiple places. So where do you feel like home is?
You know, I think that's such a good question because like until very recently, I never felt like I could ever belong. Like there's never a place where I wanted to like end up ever. Home for me was always where my parents is. And I think that's still the same feeling that I have now. Like, you know, when they were in Nebraska, Nebraska was home. Now they're in Colorado. So Colorado feels like home. But I think I posted about this yesterday on my Instagram, but like, I think the place I feel the most nostalgia for is Virginia. And I don't know why that is. I think it's like, there are certain things that just felt certain things that I think like I enjoyed my job. Like I loved being on base. I loved, you know, working in the military environment. And I loved like being able to wake up at 6 a.m., go for a run and watch the sunrise, you know, like in one of the shipyards that was like near where I lived. And I lived in this great apartment where like it was like truly like community. Everyone kind of knew each other. We were all kind of friends. All our dogs played together. Like, it was just like I miss that a lot. And I think the only reason I would go back is if I got like a GS position at that same place, the same place that I worked. But now I also like kind of fantasize about going and buying a house in Colorado when I'm done here, which hopefully no one in the admin in Philadelphia is listening. If you're listening, I really just want to stay in Philadelphia. So there's this
Absolutely.
Weird- There's this like dumb rule. So I'm a fully funded PhD student, but in order to be considered an in-state resident, which would help the department out so that they could like fund me at a lower cost, I have to prove like residency or that I'm like not leaving or that I'm fully committed to the community of Philadelphia, which I am. Like I love Philly a lot too. And like, you know, if I were to get a good job here, I would stay here too. But given that I do not have any prospects with jobs, I think Colorado is the place that I would go back to just because like, I remember when I was there during COVID, like waking up and like seeing the mountains every morning was like one of the most, it was like just the best way to wake up. It was like coffee in the morning, like how people treat coffee in the morning. For me, seeing the mountains every morning was like, just like one of the best things. And that's, I think something else, like, I guess the theme here for me is that I want to be able to see these like pretty nature elements wherever I am, which I don't really get in Philly. So, yeah.
Which thankful, you know, and so who was I talking to? Someone was like, Preston, you should go camping. And I was like, the fuck?
Like in a tent? I feel like you could do it if it was like one of those nice cabins. So recently I saw this nice tenting thing, but it was like a tenting thing. But there was like a shower inside the tent. like a really nice shower. It was like it was like a hotel room, but under a tent. I think that's, yeah, I think that's the kind of tent, the camping you could do, right?
Like, I can do that. Because my parents, we used to go to this, like, cabin when I was a kid. And it was, like, in the middle of the woods, and it had no, like, you know, TV, and you just had to play games. And I enjoyed it because it was for a weekend, okay? So I can, you know, I can do a cabin. But the idea that I move anywhere because of the nature and the environment is asinine to me. Absolutely not. Like, I don't give a fuck. Like, give me the city. Okay.
Give me the for city. Sure. That's so funny. City. Like, I just knew where this was going. You and my mom are very similar because I am the type of person who I would love to be in a tent. You know, like, I would love to rough it. And she is the type of person where, like, camping to her is like getting a nice cabin and like has to have a full functioning like kitchen. So like,
absolutely,
you know,
the comforts of home.
Yeah.
Just a little more rustic is the vibe. Okay. Glamping is what they call it. I could do that. All right.
I'll send you the link to what I was talking about though. Cause I think I totally can see you doing something like that. Like for a honeymoon or something like that. I don't know. But, but like, I think it would just be so cute. Anyway, I would still be that
experiment.
Too.
It's like an experiment. It is not something I would be like, you know, for our honeymoon where we're supposed to have fun, let's go do a camping situation. Absolutely not. Like, my idea of fun is going to a major city like Tokyo. Like, I want to go.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what I would love for our honeymoon to be, a trip to Tokyo and like see be in the city and like see all of the Japanese culture, and just like, that is what I want to do. I don't want to do anything with the environment. So
we're in a climate crisis, Preston.
Oh, and I realized when the whole pandemic hit, I was like, bitch, I don't know how to like go and get food. I was like, if the grocery stores don't open, or if everybody takes all the fucking fruit, I don't know how to go and what is it? Scavenge? Is that the word?
Yes, scavenge for food.
How am I going to go and scavenge for food?
That's okay, Preston. I got you. I got you.
I would be dead. I don't know how to do anything. I don't know how to start a fire. I don't know how to hunt for fish. I don't know how to know which berries to eat and which ones don't.
I really, mushrooms.
I would be out here just SOL. Just dead.
No, that's so funny too. Cause like last night in my conversation with my friend too, we were just joking, but I was like semi-joking because honestly, like I wouldn't mind, like, I don't want to live in like a cult commune, but I wouldn't mind a commune where like, you know, everyone's like growing their own food and like, you know, our house is solar powered and we collect rainwater. Like, I love that idea of that. I don't know how realistic it is.
Though, I like that. I like the idea of solar power.
Yeah, sure.
And I like the idea of, you know, renewable energy. And I would love to be able to do that. But I just want to do that in my modernized, functional home.
Sure. Yeah, totally. I mean, you can do that. I know, like, there's a lot of programs out there that will actually, like, pay you to do it. But anyway. But yeah,
we digress. What was the actual topic?
I think we were just talking about like where home was, and yeah, and I think we answered the question. But so when you first, like, you know, made the decision that you were going to buy a house, what was kind of the first step? Like, I know you have to go see how much you can afford or something like that. Like,
right. So it's a pre-approval process. So the first thing to me, I feel like it's almost like dating. Like, you have to find like your people when it comes time for you to like purchase a home, because the people on your team who is going through that journey with you, like your realtor, your lender, you know, your attorney, your inspector, like those people become so integral to like the success of you purchasing the home. And they are the ones that protect you from, you know, being gouged by the seller or, you know, doing something crazy that will fuck up the chance of you closing the home. So like, you really need to assess the people. So the first thing you do have to do is find basically a lender, and the lender will go through this process with that they call the pre-approval process. And they ask you all of these questions. They basically ask you, how much do you currently make? How much do you have in savings? I don't know if they asked us how much debt you have, but they pull that information. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if she specifically asked us how much debt we have. But I do remember it was like, very much like the liquid assets that you have in your bank account, how much you make annually. And then they want to know what you're looking for. So, you know, you have the option of purchasing a single family detached home. So that is, you know, a house that stands alone on a piece of property. Mm-hmm. And then, or you have the option of doing like a single family attached home, which would be like a townhouse. And then they do like condos. And I think you can also purchase like an apartment, mm-hmm. which is basically a condo, just smaller. And I think those are the main buckets that you can purchase. And of course, if you're trying to buy like multifamily homes, so like if you're trying to buy a full unit, mm-hmm. That's, you know, something you also can purchase, but that's separate. Most people who are trying to purchase for themselves, that's not an investment property, they're using one of the first few options that I mentioned. And then she kind of wants to know, like, what is your price point? Like, do you want to go over, like, where is kind of like your absolute max? And you're like, you throw a number, you say maybe 200,000, right? And then she does all of these calculations. She runs the numbers and she basically will tell you, can you afford it? That is the whole point of the pre-approval process, because they don't want to send you out to look for a home that you can't afford, yeah. right? So there's no point of you even wasting your fucking time. And I promise you, you will fall in love. If you can only afford a $200,000 home and you play yourself and you go out there and look at $350,000 homes, you're going to fall in love with it because you're going to get more. Right. Like mm-hmm. you're going, the opportunity to for it to be move in ready and have the amenities and the amenities that you want already in your home is going to be a lot higher at a higher price point. Mm-hmm. So if you play yourself, you gonna fall in love. And then you gonna be feeling real bad when they say, this is not in your price range. You cannot afford this.
Yeah.
So don't do it. And I know there are some shows. What is that? My favorite show, The Property Brothers. Have you ever watched that?
I've watched like one or two episodes, but yeah.
I love them. One, they are so attractive, I think, for, you know, white guys.
I knew you were gonna take it there.
I think they're very attractive. Anywho. And Zooey Deschanel is dating one, which, girl, don't be all up on my man. Anywho, they do this thing where they like ask the people like, oh, what do you want? And they give them their dream list, like everything that they want. And they're like, okay. And so they go find a home that is intentionally overpriced. So if their budget is $300,000, they go and find an $800,000 home and they show them, like, here is the home with everything that you want. And the people are like, oh my god, this is amazing.
That's terrible.
Yeah. And they're like, don't feel bad because it's all rigged. But they're like, but I bet this is out of our price range. And he's like, you're right. Your price range is $300,000. This one is priced at $852,030.
Oh my God.
And they're like, oh my God, like, how are we going to be able to get what we want? And then they're like, well, if you get like a fixer upper, then you can get what you want at a cheaper price. And they're like, oh, okay, I guess we'll do that. But lo and behold, you know, before they even shoot all of this, Mona, they've already bought the property. So they already know what they have. They just do that for the show. That's one of the secrets that I heard from the whole fixer-upper.
That's like, that's like terrible to do. I mean, yes. Yeah. I feel like they would be able to do that because it would be like, maybe they could. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, I did love your impression. So I think that. I think that they should adopt some of that. Anyway.
That's how they act. And then like, there's this joke that they're that the homeowners will be like, the mother, like, wife is, wife collects buttons for a living. And the husband, you know, and the husband chops pineapple. Their budget is $1.5 million. It's like, it's like a joke. Like, you literally, like, they have the most desirable job that, like, doesn't get them money. Like, they're a school teacher, which, great, it's a great job, great, respectable profession, but they don't earn, you know, as much as, like, a company over a Fortune 500 CEO, you know, would make, right? But it'll be, like, a teacher and a librarian, and their budget is $1.5 million. It's like, how? But I mean, there may be other reasons why, but that's like the joke. So all that to say is that you want to make sure that you are not playing yourself and going to see homes that are priced out of your price range, because you will fall in love and it will be a nightmare.
Ah, yeah, that makes sense. So, so you got pre-approved, and then what happens after that? Like, you just get.
So my whole point. Sorry, so I didn't finish my point.
Okay.
The point was, you need to know who your team is, because Tyler and I started that process, the pre-approval process, with one woman, and she was a referral, referred to us by a friend of Tyler's, and this woman, like, acted like she was just too busy and like she had so much on her plate and she was just trying to like make it work and like she was doing us a favor as if this isn't her fucking job. So like it just, the vibe was not there, and she like never followed up with us and she never communicated. She never came back to the table after that initial meeting. And if she was busy and, you know, could not give us time, and she has to give, you know, other people that time, fine. But say that, you know, don't dick us around and don't waste our time.
That is one of my biggest pet peeves, actually. Like, when people, like, you know, like, it's okay to not have the time, but like, at least follow up and say that you don't have the time for whatever. Like, yeah, I get that. That's one of my biggest pet peeves.
Right. And it's like, you know, we were first time homeowners. So it's not like, so, I mean, we needed someone who was going to walk us through every step versus someone who, you know, may expect to work with people who are a bit more seasoned in the real estate, you know, industry. So we just were not. And then the only one we could go to for advice would have been like my sister, who just purchased a home, but in like South Georgia, which is a completely different market.
Oh, yeah.
And my parents, who bought their home 30 years ago. So like, it wasn't apples to apples. But we did luck up, and Tyler had another referral. He was talking to someone. Tyler talks to everyone. He's the opposite of me. I talk to no one because I don't like people like that. But Tyler makes friends with everybody, which is great in these types of situations, because then people refer and they say, oh, I have a friend, or I know this person. And he led us to our current realtor, Julie, who is absolutely amazing. And she has been just so detail-oriented and so great at walking us through the process, which is why I can talk to you about it today, because I have asked multiple questions and she has like broken it down. Mm-hmm. So that was really good. So yes, find your people, find someone who's going to have the time for you, who's going to explain it to you. And so the first step is to get pre-approved. So we did all of those. She asked all the same questions, all the same things. As the first woman, we answered those questions with Julie. Julie did her calculations and was like, oh, you have more than enough. So the whole point is, A, that you're making enough to support the mortgage payment, but B, that you have enough liquid money to put down for your down payment. And the girls, when I said the girls, like the bank wants to see that you have the money. So let's be very clear. They want to see that you have the money, not that they don't need to know if you actually have the money. And what I mean by that is, for example, it really comes into play when it comes to like your 401k, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a 401k or a 403b, that is a retirement savings plan that you get through your organization, and you could be putting money into that. They're not anticipating that you're about to withdraw all of your money. So say like you have $15,000 in your 401k, they're not anticipating that you're going to pull all of that money out to support the purchase of the home, but they want to see that it's there. So if you needed it, they feel comfortable that you can go and pull it. So that's the whole point of that pre-approval process. It is to build the case that you have the money available through your savings, through your 401k or your 403b, and through any other savings accounts, checking accounts, gifts, they consider that, gifts from your family, and that you have this income to support the mortgage payment.
Sounds complicated and intense. And also, like, I don't know, I feel like I'd it's be intimidating. Put on the spot. Yeah, like,
because you really be putting your whole dirty laundry out there, like, and low-key, high-key, like, say like you're doing some shit you ain't supposed to be doing. Like, not supposed to be doing, but like, saying like you have a million and one OnlyFans accounts that be coming out of your, you know, checking account every month. Like, they gonna see that. Cause they be like, okay, provide me with the copy of like your last 30 days on your bank statement.
Yeah.
And if you got, you know, a website called like, you know, Big Dick.
Just Big Dick,
Yeah, Big Dick. They gonna see that.
That's
so they most likely not gonna ask you about it, but they're gonna be like, oh, okay.
Like, you know, and I bet like they see some of the like most insane stuff. Like, I shouldn't say insane, but like wild, like, you know, the most wild stuff. Like, it's like, that's probably an exciting part of their job. But also, I guess, like, to everyone who's trying to go through this process, make sure your purchases for at least 30 days are clean. You know, just like showing
literally like
buying the biodegradable toilet paper, like
they don't go to that micro level. Like, they're not gonna say, well, tell me what you bought at Walmart on this day, you know. They don't do that. But they definitely, the thing that they have the most concern about is any money that is being deposited into your account, and then any money that is being deducted that they can't explain the deductions. So if you're going to Walmart and you swipe your card and it's a deduction, then it says Walmart. They're like, fine. But then if you have a deduction that says, like, you know, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of like an obscure thing that they were like, what the fuck is that? Like, so like, oh, for I'll just use a real example. So like Tyler had these reoccurring charges on his bank account that said Howard. Mm-hmm. And they were like, what's that? Because that could be a person, that could be a business, what's that? And we had to write a letter of explanation and say like, oh, that is the rent payment. The company is called, they have a different umbrella company name, even though we know them as like one brand, which I don't really want to say out loud.
Then yeah, people can, right.
That's where I'm going. So we'll say the brand that we call is like, you know, Tabletop. Sure. But their umbrella organization that processes the finances is called Howard. Mm-hmm. And that is what is on the bank statement. So yeah. They want to know those types of things, but they're not going to get into the new, like the very minor, like, oh, what did you get at Target?
Yeah, that makes sense, I think.
So it is very intimidating.
Yeah, like I don't know. I mean, not that I have anything. Well, maybe I don't know. I don't think I have anything raunchy on my credit card. But anyway, just putting myself on the spot. But then what happens after that? Like, is that when you start getting to see the houses and things like that?
Yes. So, and another thing to know is that they only will look at the accounts that you provide them, right? So you don't give them your password and web, you know, username to your bank account, your Chase or your Wells Fargo, whatever you use, for them to see everything breaking down. So they only see the accounts that you provide. So for example, if I provide, they want to see your checking account where you get your actual paycheck deposited into. So I provided that, right? But I have another checking account that I use just for bills and like utilities. Like I like to put my money there and then just have things automatically come out. Mm-hmm. So I don't even have to think about it. And I know that the money that is in my checking account is like money I can spend because I've already put the other money where it needs to go.
Yeah.
Right. But I didn't have to provide information on that account because I don't use it as my main account. And I'm not using any money from that account to purchase the home. Mm-hmm. They don't care about your credit card purchases, but they do want to see your debt. It's like your debt ratio. They want to know how much you have on your credit card, but they don't look at the actual purchases on the credit card. They only look at the accounts that you give them. So if you're going to use money from your savings account, you want to provide that money.
Yeah.
That account, because you can't use money that they don't know about. That's the biggest thing. They have to know about the money and you can't use it if they don't.
Okay. And then what about like co-signers and things like that? Do they consider that in the process?
So I think it's different than a rental property. So like co-signing never came up. They did ask if Tyler and I were both going to be on the home loan and on the title of the home, because we were not married. If we were married in the state of Illinois, it's a spousal state. And so they view you as a unit, like you don't have a choice. So if we were married and I had horrible credit and Tyler had great credit, Tyler would not be able to get the home loan with just his name. Mm-hmm. They would look at both of us as one unit.
Okay.
So we would have to, we would be looked at it together. So it doesn't matter in the state of Illinois. Okay. But because we were not married, if we wanted to, I could have been solely on the lease. Solely on the home loan and solely on the title. And then Tyler could have given money towards it as a gift. We could have went and added his name to the title later. The only reason you would do that is if you're trying to qualify for certain down payment assistance programs that you don't qualify for if you are one unit because you make too much.
Oh, okay.
So did that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So if we were married, it's because of your state. So basically the point is know what type of state you live in, if it's a spousal state or not. Mm-hmm. Because if it is and you're married, you have no choice. You will have to apply as one unit mm-hmm. where they run both of your credits. And so if one person has a really fucked up credit score and the other one has a great one, then it is going to impact the type of loan you can receive and your interest rate.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the episode so far. I think that this episode is just really helpful, and I'm glad that Preston was able to break down a lot of this stuff for me, but also hopefully for all of you. Definitely come back next week to hear the remainder of this episode. But otherwise, I hope you all are doing well. Until next time, take care.